Fagan.
And welcome back to Lifeline here on Near FM of a Monday morning. It's coming up to 28 minutes now to 11. Good morning to you. And we should be joined in the studio by Lakshmi.
Now I have my guest today is Gillian Fagan, and she's a psychotherapist with transgender community, and we'll be talking to her about it's a complex subject, isn't it? And so we'll talk about it a bit. It's a huge subject, so we'll take little bits of it that we can digest. Yeah,
super.
Okay, Gillian, so
thank you.
Tell us about what it is to be, first of all, you're welcome to our program. And please tell us, what is transgender?
To put it simply, transgender is when somebody does not identify with the genitals that they were born with. So when we're born, based on our genitals, we're either male or female, or diagnosed as such at birth. And transgender is when, as you're growing up and as you're developing, you don't feel male or female in accordance with your birth sex. So you identify differently in your gender to your birth sex.
So that is a dilemma for anyone, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
So when people come to you, like, I mean, they're mostly transgender people, so you know all their problems, and most of them tell you what it is to be a transgender person in this society. So what are they really worried about when they come to you?
So many things. But first of all, it's acceptance. Acceptance, because I guess in Ireland we're such a binary culture in that everything's defined by men and women. When you're filling in any application form, your gender is male or female. When we go to the bathroom, it's men or women's bathrooms. Everything is split in terms of whether you are assumed to be male or female. So if you don't fit inside that box, if you don't feel like you are either male or female, or that you are transgender or non-binary, or even what is called genderqueer or gender fluid, there's a big issue around acceptance in society with that. That will be very much the first thing. And a lot of people then begin to doubt their own identity, question themselves, begin to think, maybe I'm going mad, maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm not right, when that's not the case at all, because they see this reflected from society. Secondly, would be more around healthcare issues, which I'm a psychotherapist, not a doctor, so I don't have a professional opinion, but I can only see what my clients bring into the room.
Yes.
And in Ireland, we don't currently have surgeries for, I guess, gender reassignment surgeries. So anybody who wants to have surgeries, to have what's called top or bottom surgeries, so to have breasts, breast augmentation or breast removal or surgery on genitalia, people have to go abroad and travel to have those surgeries. There are also waiting lists in the public health care system of, I think, up to 3 years, if not more, to access hormone therapy as well. So while somebody is on a waiting list, there's a lot of stress that goes with that.
Yes. So before they come to, say, the transition as such, they have to have the transition inside themselves.
Yeah.
So that is what when they come to you for psychotherapy, to discuss it.
Usually, I'd say half of my clients would be what's called gender non-conforming. So do not fit in with their birth sex, to put it simply. And of these clients that I see, some of them do come definitely at the exploration stage where they're questioning their identity. And out of my clients, I'd say half of them will come to me pre-transition. And even having said that, not everybody does transition. It's a personal decision. And then what transition means is very unique to each individual as well.
Yes.
So I would help somebody explore who they are, question their identity, and give them the supports around that where they might not be getting the same supports from society. I also would work a lot with people going through the transition process, with the frustrations that might come up. It's called second puberty. If say you or me at our ages, and for our listeners, we're not spring chickens as such, but if we were to go and have hormone therapy, it's like going through a second puberty.
Yes.
So yes. You have the emotional and physical issues and struggles that come up with that, like trying to control emotions, like depending on whether it's testosterone or estrogen, and how that would have an impact on our moods and on our physical selves as well. So a lot of people would come to therapy for support around the struggle of, I guess, growing into a new identity, becoming more physically aligned with how they feel, growing a beard for the first time maybe at the age of 40, whereas the world might have perceived that person as female until that age, even though this person identifies as male. And there's a lot of issues that comes with that. And then of course I would have a lot of clients who just come for what I would call nearly bog standard psychotherapy, where yes, they are trans and they're coming to work with me because I am what's called a trans aware therapist, but they're not coming for therapy to deal with issues around being trans. They're coming to therapy to deal with issues around work, anxiety, family issues, relationships, you know, the
everyday the common garden variety.
Exactly. Everyday common struggles that, that everybody, that we all share, that we all have in common.
But they probably choose you because you work with the transgender community. And so they probably think that you understand their dilemmas and
very much so. A lot of my clients would say it's great to meet somebody I don't have to educate. And don't get me wrong, by that I get most of my education and my learning from my clients. Of course we do as therapists, you know, we learn from our clients, but to already know the language is a huge advantage. To not be judgmental is a huge advantage, and to be accepting. Whereas I remember even my training, and as far as the world of psychotherapy goes, I'm still quite a new psychotherapist. I graduated 2.5 years ago, so I'm only seeing clients since 2014. So I'm in a way that works to my advantage, because in 2015 the DSM model changed, which is and before that time, I guess transgender was considered a disorder, gender identity disorder.
Dysphoria.
Yeah, in 2015 it got recategorized as gender dysphoria. So it's not seen as mental illness anymore. But there are some professionals who trained before that change and would have, I guess, their own unconscious bias or conscious bias around how to define gender. So because I don't... I'm quite accepting. I have friends, before I ever studied, I have friends who are trans or gender non-conforming. A lot of friends. I even shared a house. I had a housemate who's transgender back more than 10 years ago. So it was something I was aware of anyway. It wasn't something that I learned about in college. Well, not in my mainstream college. So yeah, when clients come to me, it's that they don't have to educate me in language. That they don't feel judged and they feel accepted, and that I'm aware of the current laws with, I guess, around gender. Even 2015 was a massive year. The DSM got reclassified. In Ireland, we had the marriage equality referendum, which also has an effect for transgender people. A friend of mine transitioned and she was born as male and identified as male at birth, but she's female. She, before transitioning, she married a woman, and when she transitioned, there was two women in what appeared to be a same-sex marriage, and her marriage was, I mean, there were big issues around whether that marriage was even validated or seen as a marriage anymore. But then in 2015 we had the marriage equality referendum, so that makes a difference as well for transgender people too. We can marry whoever we wish, regardless of gender or sex. And also in 2015 in Ireland, we have the Gender Recognition Act. So quite a big year regarding gender non-conforming or LGBT people all around.
I suppose once it was taken out of as a sickness, you know, like it was labelled dysphoria. Dysphoria, And so this label was taken out, and that's a huge relief for people. It's from DSM-5 now.
That's right,
So I suppose that made a huge difference for people, so that they're not seen as sick people.
Absolutely. How validating.
Yes.
Imagine not being aligned with the body you're born in. Imagine looking in the mirror every day and really not recognizing what you see because it's not what you feel. And then for the medical staff to tell you it's a disorder, it's a mental illness. How horrific that must be. And if anything else, that would be one of the biggest causes of depression and identity disorder. Not, never mind gender identity, just identity disorder, that you are not okay as you are. There is something wrong with you. And so it's so validating that that got revised and is now not seen as a disorder. It is not a mental illness. It's not that something is wrong with somebody. It is now a gender dysphoria, which is a very valid and very real thing.
Yes. Now I think they would say there's a lot of... I was looking at research done, and there's a high incidence of suicide among this problems with gender.
Yeah.
And I think it's very high in the States from what I read with the research there. Very high, about 40%.
Yeah, yeah. And I can understand from, even with the States was making such progress. And
yes,
Trump has not done any favours for the LGBT community. And that's, we could have hours of conversation on that if we go into a political route, for sure. I think what at the moment what's happening in the political world in the States is very damaging to people in the world of self-acceptance and validation, for sure.
Well, to be different is not good enough now.
Yeah, it's like I'm giving you something, but then I'm taking it away.
And when people come to you, for instance, do you have children?
No, I don't have children and I don't work with children. I have 9 nieces and nephews, but no, I'm not.
But there are children now who say that they want to be not the gender that they were born with.
Yeah.
And there's a dilemma. And I was talking to a mum recently. She said she has a child who's 14, 15. And I think GIDS, you know, GIDS, it's the, what do you call it? It's gender identity clinic. It's a clinic from England.
Yes. Tavistock?
Tavistock, yes. And they're very good, actually. They counsel the parents as well as the children. And they come here once a month, I think.
They do. They work with St. Grunwald's Children's Hospital, actually.
Yes.
And they are brilliant. I would have... I suppose a lot of my training came via research through them, for sure. It's a curious one regarding children. And in Ireland, we still have a massive gap in that respect, because when somebody is in children's services, like, for example, a transgender child, and then moves to adult services, they have to be taken off the children's list and put on the adult list. And sometimes there's a gap in terms of their progress on their medication, which causes huge distress. I don't work with anybody under 18, but I would have some clients coming to me at the age of 18 who say had been on hormones and now aren't and are back onto a waiting list.
When you say medication, you mean hormones, is it?
Hormones or blockers, an antigen.
What do you mean blockers?
To delay puberty. To delay the onset of puberty so that there is no permanent changes being made while a child has a chance to discover who they are, play with the idea of identity, and grow into themselves. Tenny are doing amazing work with the HSE on training around this area, and hopefully in time, I genuinely don't know how it's going to play out with Brexit, but hopefully in time we won't have the need for Tavistock and we'll be able to provide our own services for kids. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Belong To as well. They are fantastic. They work with young people, 16 to 23,
what,
as far as I'm aware.
Belong To?
Belong To, LGBT services. But they offer superb support for parents of trans or gender questioning children. And I would have a lot of parents ringing me. I don't work with children, but a lot of parents would ring and ask me, could I please see... and I would refer them to Belong To as their first port of call. As far as I know, Belong To run a parent support group called Transparency, which is, I mean, parents need that support as well.
Definitely, parents definitely need it. Because this lady was talking to me about how they need, and they go to GIDS, comes once a month, I think. And that's the problem. They have a very long period to wait for these services. Even in Ireland, is it the same?
In Ireland it's even longer, a waiting list.
Say, for instance, if someone says, okay, I want to, you know, I don't want to be the boy I am, I want to be a girl, mm-hmm. to a parent. How would the parent go about, you know, how would they start helping their child?
I think, and this is an area that's a little bit foreign to me, not having children or working with children, but mm-hmm. I've seen it with my sister's probably listening to this, so I hope she doesn't mind me saying this. Mm-hmm. I've seen it with my nephew. He has two older sisters, mm-hmm. and when he was growing up, he went through a phase of wanting to wear the same fairy princess dresses his sisters were wearing. And his parents, and this is my sister now, they allowed him that creativity and the freedom of expression. Mm. He was wearing tutus, and he's eight. He's now mountain climbing, football playing. Mm. He couldn't, you know, he's very much entrenched in his masculinity for an eight-year-old for now. But it's about allowing the child to creatively express who they are and play with the idea of identity. Children will tell you who they are. And if you try to suppress that, and the reason I'm saying this, I see this from the adult that has had that suppression and that oppression and that very strict box in which they had to be raised in. What will the neighbours think? And that kind of, you know, I'm sure every Irish person has heard that phrase. What will the neighbours think? So, but it's about allowing the freedom of expression. I think children go into themselves.
Wasn't there a European tradition that the young, in the old times, that they used to, boys were dressed up as girls? There was a tradition even here. I think they used to put them, you know.
Probably.
Yes, and they were babies and so.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. And I suppose they weren't any pink and blue then.
Exactly, yes. And even all christening gowns are white, frilly. Mm.
Frilly,
you know.
Yes.
So, yeah. And again, you nailed it. The pink and blue, that binary, the male and female. Mm. And I think as a society, we are very slowly
the society
past
is transition is in transition.
Yeah, society really is transition.
So
also,
it is difficult. If I'm a member of society and part of the community, it is very hard when unusual things like this happen, when there were labels before. Now these labels are changing. So even for people in society, it's difficult, just like it for therapists.
Yeah.
They have to relearn their therapeutic skills, how to treat transgender people, right? So how did you manage? I remember you saying that you had a person, one of your house guests or whatever, mates were.
Yeah.
He or she was a transgender person.
Yeah.
So you had first-hand experience.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
Growing up in this society, you're part of this society. And how did you manage to be different?
That is a very, very tricky question. And the therapist in me immediately wants to go back to our template, our foundations, our family of origin.
Mm.
And I suppose the same then would ring true for me, because in my family of origin, we were very much accepting and had a live and let live attitude. And my parents have always been self-employed. So when they were working, my grandmother, who lived in the city centre at the time, would have minded us.
Mm.
And my grandmother, her name was Cora, and I've named my psychotherapy practice after her. Acora Therapy is my practice. Cora was a very liberal yet simultaneously traditional woman.
Mm.
She welcomed everybody into her home and into the community. Mm. She was very much involved with community, and as a child I used to help her she did Meals on Wheels, and we'd visit the old people and I'd be sitting chatting away, and she'd visit people who were infirm and ill and bring them dinner. She always cooked, I'd say every day when she made dinner it was for 20 people regardless of who was or wasn't there. So she had an open door policy, anybody could come in, and in a way she was very much a natural therapist. A very natural therapist. People would just come in and eat with her, and she she'd listen to them. And then my other grandmother, my mother's mother, has a very diverse background herself, having come from, and she's almost 90 now, she's still alive, but having come from a Protestant family, and, well, her mother came from a Protestant family and married a Catholic family, and there was a lot of diversity around that as well. My dad's mum, Rita, is her name. She is also one of the most accepting, welcoming people, in that it doesn't matter who you are, what your background is, or where you come from. It's a case of live and let live. So the two pillars that I got to stand on, the two women that raised my parents, who then raised me, were very open-minded and accepting and not judgmental. They kind of said, well, what's the problem? Live and let live. What harm? And when you sort of grow up with that attitude, like, it does shape how you view the world. When I was 14, I volunteered with St. Michael's House and worked with disabled children. And when I was 15, I began to volunteer with the Vincent de Paul, and I used to visit inpatients in St. Brendan's Psychiatric Hospital. As a teenager, probably weird hobbies for a teenager to have, but having said that, it was just a community thing that I didn't question. I didn't, and I got to meet a lot of people who would have been, I guess, pushed aside by society, didn't fit into societal norms, and that definitely shaped who I became as an adult, for sure, even in terms of the friendships I made, the partners I chose. And yeah, you were right in saying that I did live with a transgender person as well over 10 years ago. And at that time, they weren't solidly identified gender, but they were questioning. And this person is now, well, she's in her 60s and has transitioned, and it's fabulous to see. But yeah.
So actually, this is really interesting, because if you were brought up in a cultural setting, in spite of the labels that, you know, that are in society, there were people of your grandmother's, two grandmothers, right? And in this community, there are lots of people like that, who, once the labels are off, they are willing to come out and you know, reclaim that diversity.
And labels bring up their own issues, actually, as you know. On a personal note, I'm quite anti-labels, but yet I understand completely how labels can help a person identify and define who they are. Mm. I've seen the damage labels can do, and I think labels are a source of most bullying in a way. Mm. Once a label gets attached, there can be a stigma associated with it. And as a child and as a teen, I've experienced bullying myself, and I've heard some of the labels that went with rightly or wrongly, but when you get a label and it sticks to you, it's very hard to shake that off. And I think society likes putting everything in boxes so
well,
that
it's
we
convenient,
can identify.
Isn't it? It's convenient, because, well, people are very busy in their own life.
Well,
they don't want to tackle these problems that have labels.
And a lot of it's unconscious too.
Yes,
a lot of it is. We categorize everything. That's how our brain works.
Yes, but it's still. I mean, how our families can influence us to become who we are.
And I think it starts with acceptance and just allowing a person to be themselves.
As you were saying, because my background is also in therapy and psychology, so I can relate with you. My background, I would say, would be very similar to yours. I had accepting women around me. Mm. I don't know why they're only women. I suppose men are too busy bringing the bread home.
Perhaps. And to be honest, I wouldn't even know my grandfather's minds in that respect. But I saw it. You learn sometimes by seeing. Sometimes you don't need to learn through academia or... You know, the world around us shapes us. We're learning by osmosis anyway.
Don't you think, as therapists, that people, most people learn from their clients?
Oh, yeah.
It's not from the books that you learn. It's really what people say to you.
Yes.
And it's each individual is so different.
Isn't it?
And that's another thing, that it's not when you're transgender, there's no one label. It's transgender. Okay, we accept it. You might find that each person is so different, their world is different.
And unfortunately, that's where we have to jump in, because time has beaten us yet again. And another fascinating point in what is an absolutely fascinating subject, and certainly it's something that can be followed through.
Yes, we would get a person who can directly tell us their experience.
Yeah.
In the future.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I can't believe how quickly that went.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gillian. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And letting us know what it is to be transgender.
You're welcome.